The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour, we'll be doing a best of. We'll be playing an interview heard from last summer with Rabbi Benjamin Blech, the Sistine Chapel Secrets. That was an awesome interview, and if you missed it, you missed a good one, but you get to hear it again. And maybe you heard it, but you missed some of the details because it was very intense. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Portion of the week is Vayakhel Pekudei. We're finishing off the book of Exodus. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. We've got a wonderful variety of music. We're closing with a Purim song. I never introduce my closer, but just to let you know, the closer is a Purim song. We have a terrific Hasidic story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Russia is selling Egyptian advanced defense systems, military helicopters, MiG-29 aircraft, and anti-tank missiles. The value of the deal is $2 billion. Russia has aggressively been pursuing its own sphere of influence in the Arab world, which until recently was limited to Syria. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will meet with U.S. President Barack Obama on March 3rd in the course of a five-day visit to the U.S. The two are expected to discuss the Iranian nuclear arms project and the peace negotiations between Israel and the PA. Netanyahu will address the 2014 AIPAC policy conference, that's the American-Israel, political action committee, on the day after his meeting with Obama. Members of Knesset walked out in protest during a speech by European Union President Martin Schulz. Schulz accused Israel of depriving Gaza of water, saying that the average Israeli has access to four times the amount of water as people in Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu criticized President Schulz for believing Palestinian rhetoric, as the prime minister quoted the PA water company statistics that shows that there's no water shortage in Gaza. And of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu was criticized by the EU Parliament for criticizing the president of the European Union. I'm glad I'm not a politician. A group of 50 yeshiva students were attacked, it probably should be was attacked since it's a group, at the graveside of Talmudic Rabbi Matia ben Harash in the Lower Galilee. No one was hurt in the attack. Denmark's Agriculture and Food Ministry approved a new law which requires animals to be stunned before slaughter. Jewish law requires the animal to be fully conscious when slaughtered. The law is not considered anti-Semitic, but pro-animal rights. Okay. Denmark has a Jewish community of about 6,000 people, and all kosher meat in the country has been imported for the last decade, so it's really a moot point as far as that goes. Former CIA Director James Woolsey again called for the release of Jonathan Pollard, who is now in his 29th year in jail on spying for Israel. Woolsey said that the time Pollard has served already is unprecedented for the crime he was convicted of. And finally, Israel was accepted as an observer of the 28-nation Pacific Latin Trade Alliance. Israel hopes to increase its exports to the Pacific Rim and South America. Currently, less than 1% of Israeli airports are sent to that region. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Rabbi Benjamin Blech, who is an internationally recognized educator, religious leader, author, and lecturer, a recipient of the American Educator of the Year Award. He's been a professor of Talmud at Yeshiva University since 1966, and we're here to discuss, believe it or not, the Sistine Chapel, because of his book, The Secret of the Sistine, The Sistine Secret. Excuse me, how are you today, Rabbi Blech?
Good, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on. You're going to be coming to Detroit very near future. We're going to give the details really soon. I guess what would be called a glib comment. You've been a professor of Talmud at Yeshiva University since 1966. Was that immediately before or post your bar mitzvah?
That's very funny. I really can't believe I've been there for that long and that I am that old. But that's the truth.
Okay, now, so let's get right to it. First of all, my wife, when this book came out, we got a copy of it, and my wife started jumping up and down, and she became immediately the president of the Benjamin Blech fan club, and just automatically, she just is yelling at me. She has been yelling at me for years, you have to have Benjamin Blech on. And I said, well, when it becomes a Detroit thing, we'll have him on. My wife has more foresight than I do. So the Sistine Chapel isn't exactly what I would refer to, or most people refer to, as a Jewish subject. What was it that brought you to writing a whole entire book about it?
That's an incredible story. When I was interviewed on 2020, who did a whole hour show on the book, the first question which by here asked me was, what's a nice Jewish boy doing in a place like this? And obviously, it is strange for a Jew to write a book on that. Let me make clear that this book was co-authored with Roy Doliner, who is someone who dedicated his life to studying Michelangelo, has been in Rome for the last 25 years, and knows almost everything there is to know about Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapel. What happened was that I was involved in a mission of rabbis. I led a mission that was anxious to get Vatican objects that they have that belong to the Jewish people back to our people. And when those rabbis were there, I was busy with bureaucracy, but they went on a tour with Roy Doliner. And when they got finished, they said, this is the most incredible thing we have ever heard. There are Jewish ideas hidden in the frescoes. There are anti-church messages, that is to say, anti-church of those times. There are very abstruse concepts that one has to know Kabbalah and Midrash in order to understand, but that's what Michelangelo did. The rabbis who were on that tour said to Roy Doliner, you have to write this as a book, and he said, I'm not a writer, and they said, well, the rabbi who's with us is, and why don't you get together with him? And this proved to be a most beautiful shidduch, that is to say, a marriage relationship between the two of us, and the book is an incredible summary of things that nobody had seen before. People always ask us, how is it that you two have been able to spot these things and nobody beforehand has? And the answer probably is that people who were interested in the Sistine Chapel were never really interested in Kabbalah and Midrash and Talmud, and people who were into Talmud and Midrash and Kabbalah, really, to put it mildly, never cared about the Sistine Chapel. What we did was merge two intellectual religious disciplines and come up with ideas that are mind-boggling.
Incredible. The Sistine Chapel actually has a quite a formidable website. When I was looking and researching the book and for today's interview, so I went online and there is a, it's not a webcam, it's a virtual tour. And you can close up, you can zoom in right into the nostrils of God, so to speak, and zoom out and get the whole thing. There doesn't seem to be anything Christian about the ceiling. How did that perchance happen?
That's one of the amazing things that Pope Julius II commissioned Michelangelo to do the ceiling as an act of homage to Jesus and Mary, and that was supposed to be the theme. Now, 95% of the ceiling is Old Testament themes, and 5% is pagan, and there isn't a single Christian theme in the entire Sistine Chapel ceiling. This had to be done on purpose, and Michelangelo was trying to make a statement. Michelangelo was a student of Pico della Mirandola, and Pico loved Jewish studies, knew Midrash and Talmud, had the largest library of Kabbalah in the world at the time, even though he wasn't Jewish. And Michelangelo absorbed all of this, and he, Michelangelo, was very anxious to do away with what at that time was something that the church was pushing very strongly, to move away from its Judaic roots, to move away from Old Testament, and start everything from the new. It's fascinating that now, you may have seen this, there is a very strong movement in scholarship, Christian scholarship, taking the Jewish aspects of Christianity and understanding them better, acknowledging that that's where so much of Christianity comes from. To ignore Judaic roots is basically to falsify Christianity.
What was the most surprising thing you found and discovered with the Sistine Chapel doing your research, Rabbi Benjamin Bloch?
Oh, there were so many surprising things. One of them is that in the Tree of Knowledge, everybody in the Middle Ages had done the fruit of the tree as an apple. And Michelangelo, for some strange reason, depicted a fig. And people don't know why. It turns out that in the Midrash, that's what they say it was, a fig. And Michelangelo chose the Midrashic interpretation over what had been standard fare, standard interpretation in the world at large.
Interesting, indeed. And is that really a surprise to people when they hear such a thing?
Yes, very much so. Let's get to some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He, Michelangelo, did some very daring things. Now, at the portal to the Sistine Chapel in those days, you entered under where Zechariah is. And Zechariah had two little angelic figures above him. Michelangelo used this very often as commentary. And the two angels, one on either side, were making gestures which could not be seen without the aid of cameras today. They can focus in on distance. You're talking about 60 and a half feet in the air. And lo and behold, one of the little angelic figures is doing something with his fingers that in those days represented what we call in America giving the finger with the middle digit. And for them, it's what they do in Europe. It's called giving the fig, where you put your thumb between the first and second digit. And could you imagine? He was having a little playful, joyous game at Julius II's expense. Michelangelo didn't want to do this job. Michelangelo was a sculptor. And as a matter of fact, he ran away two times when he was forced to come back and finish the job, which explains something else. The single largest and most powerful fresco was Jonah. And people wonder, Jonah is a minor prophet, and what's the big deal? with Jonah. And the answer is because Jonah was sent by God to prophesy to the Gentiles, show them their faults, and he ran away because he didn't want to do it. Jonah was Michelangelo's alter ego. Michelangelo identified with Jonah, and he, in fact, felt that he was the Jonah in his time with a mission to set the church right. I think the most powerful idea of all is that, you know, if you ask anybody in the world today, what year is it? Let's say 2013. And what does that mean, 2013? Because that's the birth of Jesus. Whether it's off by a year or two, doesn't matter. But it's a concept. And the concept is that anything that had to do with the world before Jesus was insignificant, was not really important. Well, lo and behold, Michelangelo, when he's doing these frescoes, doesn't begin with Jesus and post-Jesus, but he begins with creation of Adam and Eve, which is the most universalistic idea imaginable, and which is fundamentally Jewish, because we are going to celebrate the New Year very shortly, and the New Year is a universal New Year with the original ancestors of the world, not just Jews. We don't celebrate the beginning of Adam, the beginning of Abraham, or even Sinai for creation, or the beginning of the new year. And for Michelangelo to have agreed with that, to have accepted that, I think is remarkable.
Indeed. There was a book written many decades ago, and a movie that came out made from the book. A historical fiction. It was called The Agony and the Ecstasy. And
yes, of course.
What percent would you say that was true, and how much was historical, how much
it's
was fiction?
Movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie. A lot of it, probably most of it is fiction. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was wrong.
Uh-huh. Indeed.
Now, but of course, the goal of that particular movie was not to introduce the ideas that we have in the book. They certainly wouldn't have emphasized any of the concepts that we found in Michelangelo's work that revolved around universalistic ideas. And as I told you, Michelangelo hated Pope Julius II. He was a great guy. He was a moral person. And here were the popes, the Borgias beforehand, who were murderers. There were popes who had syphilis because they contracted it from their mistresses. Pope Julius II was telling Michelangelo when he was working on the ceiling, you know, I don't think there's enough gold. We really need gold, gold, gold. These were people who were very materialistic and whose values, how shall I put it, were not spiritual and religious values. And Michelangelo wanted to stress that, and he did, by showing the contempt that he had for the church leaders at the time. I want to stress something.
Go ahead.
Because this is not an attack on the church, but rather an attack, as Michelangelo saw it, on the church leadership of the time, which has subsequently been renounced by the good guys in the church, by Pope John Paul II, by the people who came to power within the last century. These are not the ones who felt the way the original popes did, and who were really not role models.
Indeed. Okay. Now, I have just one more question about this section. We want to talk about the other thing that you're going to be talking about. Maybe you can corroborate something. When I was in eighth grade, I had a world history teacher whose name escapes me right now, and he was a bit of a cynic. And we were learning about, of course, world history at that time, when the 1500s. And he talked about the Sistine Chapel, and he said that they don't, that Michelangelo, when he was painting faces, was actually painting actual people. And he gave a whole list. I only remember two. He said that the face of God was Michelangelo's benefactor, who was the head of the Medicis, and that Julius II was the face of the guy who's descending into purgatory. Any corroboration of that, Rabbi Blech?
Yes, there is. And a matter of fact, he even put himself in one of those portraits. He went to show that he was going through hell and being was having a difficult life. He did use figures that he knew that were part and parcel of his life. That's true.
Okay, cool. Now, you're also going to be talking about, this is something that really fascinates me and has always fascinated me, is the Jewish antiquities that are holed up in the Vatican, which I'm saying at this point would be held captive in the Vatican. What did you find when you went looking there, Rabbi Benjamin?
Oh, that's a long story, and I'm not going to give away everything on the air now. But that's how I got involved in this whole thing, because I was in New York and speaking at a conference of doctors and talking about Maimonides, and somebody came over to me and he said, you know, it's fascinating about Maimonides, and if you ever need any help with the Vatican, I have great connections there, and I can see what I can do. And I thought he was just blowing off steam, and I said, sure. I said, I'd love some help, because we'd love to get items back that they have in their possession for many, many years that actually belong to the Jewish people. And he said, let me see what I can do, and I'll give you a call. And I expected to hear from him like I expect a call from Obama this week. And lo and behold, 3 weeks later, I get a call, and he says, are you ready to go to Rome and meet with the Pope?
Wow.
So I said, I'll look at my calendar. Of course, that was absolutely incredible. And
what year was this?
And this was in 05.
Okay. And there have been things that were published since. I know that in the early 80s, Rabbi Blau from Jerusalem went and had permission to take microfilms of manuscripts, and we have whole works of from the Gaonim period because of manuscripts that were kept at the Bible. But this is it. Now, what was your purpose then in going to visit with the Pope? Are we talking about getting things out from the Vatican?
Well, we were trying to do as much as we could, understanding that if you ask for too much, you get nothing. We also learned something very, very fascinating. It seems that some of the stuff that we were looking to get back from the church, Chief Rabbi of Israel, Lau, had met with the Pope years before, and the answer to him was no. And we found the Vatican and the leadership of the Vatican very receptive, and we couldn't understand what was responsible for the change. And the most interesting answer is something that we heard from a number of cardinals, and they sort of whispered it to us, and they said, you know, in light of the Muslim threat to the world and to Christianity, we realize that for them, both you and we are infidels. That's to say, both Jews and Catholics are infidels, so we share a common enemy, and we have to begin to create new alliances. I thought that was absolutely amazing.
Okay, so if you can just, without giving away the whole show, what were some of the incredible things that you saw, and where are they now?
Well, I don't want to give it away, but I will tell you that we saw an original manuscript of Maimonides, which in the course of time had scribal errors, and there was always some supposition that the editions that we have concretized these mistakes. And so it was extremely important for us to take a look at what really was said by Maimonides, and lo and behold, it was a mistake. It is a mistake.
This is his Toma.
In all the places that study Maimonides, which is around the Jewish world, there's a crucial error, which I will discuss, that is perpetuated because people didn't have access to the original, and we saw that. Obviously, also, people ask, what about items from the temple.
Yes, that was my next question.
Yeah, and I can only tell you this. Obviously, we didn't see anything like that because they're not going to show it to us. However, this was an amazing story. I met somebody in Rome. We were hosted by the Jewish community in Rome, and the chief rabbi introduced us to a man who had been in the Italian army during World War II, and he was not recognized as a Jew, nor did he identify himself as such, because he knew how difficult it would be for him if he did. That battalion was responsible for a major victory, and the church came to them and said, as a reward for your efforts, we are going to show you something that nobody gets to see and nobody knows exists. Now, all these things, you have to remember, are anecdotal, and historians tend not to accept anecdotal, but history is anecdotal in the larger sense. He said they had to promise not to reveal what they saw. They were taken 14 floors below in the bowels of the Vatican, and he said they showed him the parochet, the curtain that separated the Holy of Holies from the Holy, and it had a sword's tear, exactly like the story in the Talmud when Titus came in and wanted to slay the Jewish God, took out his sword, thought that he could kill the Jewish God, and made this rip. Incredible that that is there. Leads me only to wonder what else is there. There are some things that we discovered as well, and then there are some things that are conjecture. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the biggest of all questions, the menorah, I can only tell you that almost all historians believe that it was melted down for the gold, it was on a ship, it sunk. Nobody can believe that it's still there.
Existent.
However, one more time, anecdotally, Lubavitcher Rebbe, who I don't think just says things that are wild, claimed, and I heard from people who heard it directly from him, that he knows for a fact that they have it. Now, I don't really like to talk about this because that tends to diminish the credibility that I might have, because when somebody will say, oh, come on now, that's stretching it way too far. However, I just want you to know that there are people who do believe that. There is also a famous article by a professor at Hebrew University who discovered that the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol, the thing that was on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol, is in the possession of the Vatican.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
You have to remember that these are things that they are not going to publicize. People often ask me, why do they want to keep these items? They have nothing to do with Christians. What do they want? Why do they want these things? And I have to remind people that Catholics believe that they are the true descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that religion went through the Jewish people to a higher level, which is their form of Judaism that now is Christianity. And one more thing, the fact that they are in possession of these items lends them theological validation in their eyes. They believe that the fact that they have these items means that God is saying, you're my boys, you are my sons, you have my favor because I want you to have it. And of course, if they don't give it up, they continue to have it.
Okay, you're going to be at, let's do it this way. Rabbi Benjamin Blech will be giving a lecture here in Detroit at the Berman Center at the JCC in West Bloomfield on August the 27th, I believe it's 7:30 in the p.m. And again, there's going to be a lunch and learn the following day at the JCC. For more information, contact the JCC at 661-1000. It's a 248 area code. Tickets are limited. The only time that Rabbi Blech is going to be here. I have one just last departing question for you. Is I have a newly printed, one of the newer edition Rambams. And if you could just tell me which book the mistake is in so I can bring my edition to see if they've corrected that mistake.
In Hilchot Ishud. The Laws of Marriage.
Okay, that's my own personal thing.
The Rambam says that two of them are biblical and one of them is rabbinic, and kesef, marriage through money, is rabbinic, does not make sense and goes against the Talmud and turns out is an error.
Okay. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us. I'm looking forward to greeting you. Thank you so much for coming on and continued success.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Okay. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Reminded that that was a best of, and Rabbi Blech will not be, will not be coming to the Berman Center anytime soon, as far as I can see. Sid Caesar passed away, age 92. Probably one of the funniest comedies. They call him the father of Jewish comedy. I'm not so sure about that title, but I did find out posthumously that he was a big contributor to Chabad in California. And we have, even I couldn't find anything doing anything specifically Jewish per se that we could say, well, that's Jewish comedy. But we have Mel Brooks talking about what it was like writing for Sid Caesar.
You worked for Sid Caesar on a great show, your show of shows. And I've heard, there's a story that he was physically very strong, you know, man, and that you experienced that more than anybody else.
I went to Chicago. Sid had a gig in the second year of the show of shows when we had our hiatus in Chicago at the Palmer House in the Empire Room. And he was good, but he wanted more jokes. And we were up in his room, and he was smoking cigars. And it was 2 in the morning, and I said, "We got air. And he said, air. I can't, the cigar smoke, I can't. And he said, air? And Sid had a vodka or two. Or maybe 16, I don't know. Yeah. And he went to the window, air, you want air? And a window probably was shut for 40 years, you know? And he went bang, and it was open. And then he grabbed me by the collar and by the pants, and he held me over Michigan Avenue. Air, you like, we're having air. And I'm looking, I see taxi cabs, I see people. You know? He said enough, plenty, I've had enough air, yeah. And he took me. He took me back inside. While we were in Chicago, we rented a car and we scraped a taxi cab. And they have a little leather bow tie and a yellow cap, the Chicago cab drivers. And the cab driver said, "You son of a bitch." And I said, "Oh my God, oh, you don't say son of a bitch, Caesar. You simply don't." Because he's not only the funniest comic, but also the strongest comic in the world. So he walks over to the cab driver's cab, and he says, I want to talk to you about your birth. I want to talk to you. Do you remember when you were born? Can you have any memory? The cab driver's looking at him like he rolls up his window, but he leaves that little clipper window open. You know, there used to be a window for air.
A little vent window. Yeah.
And so Sid, he says, "Can you remember anything about your birth?" And the guy says, "What, are you crazy?" And he says, "Don't worry about it. We're going to reenact." And he grabs him by the leather bow tie, starts pulling him out of that clipper window. it would have been one spaghetti of a cat. I had a bite.
We were reenacting.
He was very strong. He was very talented. Most comics you wrote for, I wrote for, you prayed that they met your material, that they just did it.
Yeah.
Sid always raised it. Sid always made it funnier.
Everyone said he was the best instrument to hear your music through.
He was the best. He was the best.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have, for your listening pleasure, it seemed to come to my across my desk that there is a movement in this country of fusing bluegrass music and klezmer music, which to me doesn't seem like a fusion at all, because as far as I can see, Irish folk music and gypsy music and klezmer music and bluegrass music, it's all the same. And it's just sort of like, who's singing? So this is, we have for you, is the Klezmer Mountain Boys doing a Klezmer Hara.
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We have a request. If you have a request or some kind of music, that you can send that off to rabbifinman.com. This is a crowd. We get these periodically. There's a group of high school girls in Chicago who are listening on rabbifinman.com. And it seems they're waxing nostalgic because they wanted to hear Yaakov Shweki singing Mehera, which is a song which is sung at weddings. It's not a wedding song. It's the song which is sung at weddings, usually while people are eating. So this goes out to the girls of Chicago and everybody else. Yaakov Shweki.
Meheiro Hashem, Hashem Melekeinu, Yishoma Beyore Yehudo. Uvechutzos Yerushalayim, Uvechutzos Yerushalayim. Meheiro Hashem, Shoma v'yore Yehuda U'vechutzos Yerushalayim U'vechutzos Yerushalayim
Go to a hospital, get healthy. At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248 624 9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. This week's portion is the portion of Vayakhel. It can be found in chapter 35 of the book of Exodus. Moses gathered together all the Jewish people, it says, and he told them about the Shabbos. That's at the beginning of the portion. Most of the portion is a recapitulation of how to build a sanctuary. And in fact, it goes into quite great detail of how they actually built the sanctuary. But at the beginning of the portion, people are all gathered together and they're all told about keeping the Shabbos. And Moses gets them all together and he says, I want to tell you something about keeping the Shabbos. You're not allowed to make a fire on Shabbos. Actually, it says you're not allowed to have a fire burning in your house on Shabbos. It's from this verse that we learn of the existence of a Torah Shebal Peh, of an oral tradition. There was existent a very large group, which now is a very, very small group, of Jews who interpreted the Torah literally and maintained that you should be able to study the Bible just by reading the words. And so what did they interpret? They interpret that when it says you shall have no fire burning in your house on the Shabbos, that meant there was no fires burning in their houses on Shabbos. And it would be really cold on their houses if they lived in Michigan for this last couple of months. And because they had no fires, they sat in the dark on Friday night. They ate cold food on Shabbos day. And indeed, the rabbis, to counteract this movement, enacted the lighting of candles on Friday night by women and girls ages 3 and up to light Shabbos candles. And the eating, the consumption of hot food, which the only way you can do that is if you have a fire burning, which was cooked before the Shabbos and left to stay warm, or hot as the case may be, overnight so that you could have hot food on Shabbos afternoon, which, believe me, coming home from these long, hard Shabboses, it's really very special to be able to sit down and have a steaming hot bowl of chulent, which would be translated loosely as Shabbos stew, but doesn't do justice to the whole concept. You haven't lived unless you've had chulent, especially a good chulent. Ay, my mouth is starting to water, and it's only Sunday. I just had it yesterday. Anyway, the deal being is, you can't just read the Bible. You have to be taught the Bible by a teacher. I happen to learn, I have a class with a group of non-Jews, and when I tell them what the words of the Bible mean, we started this class about 8 months ago, and we're just now starting the third chapter of Genesis. We started with Genesis 1:1, and we're just now getting into the story of the snake in the Garden of Eden, because there just is so much to see there. And so I recommend that if you are engaged in Bible study, you contact a teacher, someone like myself. You can go to rabbifinman.com and we can talk about that. Or go online and find some authentic source like a Chabad.org or one of those places. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to rabbifinman.com. You'll find right on the homepage contact link. You send me an email. I send you back an email. We become good buddies. Life is good. You'll also find archive editions of the show the last month or so. It's up there on the website if you want to hear something. We have archived editions of the U-Parsha, the Hasidic Use story, the E-Parsha, which are information about the portion of the week, Hasidic stories, etc., that are conveyed in other media than this one. You'll also find the very important donations page. It is February the 16th. Never mind February. We're still working on January over here, and we need your help. I understand it's the beginning of the year. People aren't thinking, well, the tax man's not bothering me, but the Almighty is. So send your donation to the go to the Jewish Hour, the donations page, and click on a number. It's all safe, secure, PayPal, and give today. Don't wait 5 minutes because you'll forget. Give today. Don't like using the internet for donations and credit cards and all that stuff? I understand. Send your donation to any amount to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. The Hasidic story. When the Shalom Rokeach, known as the Belzer Rebbe, the first Belzer Rebbe, was traveling to the wedding of his son, who eventually became the second Belzer Rebbe, his name was Rabbi Yoshua. He also had some sort of name, which I don't remember what they refer to them. I'm not up on Belzer trends, whatever they call it, their names are. So he was stopped at the Russian border in the city of Chorkov, which I think is on the Russian-Romanian border. And the Russians wouldn't let him in for a long time. And he's told that he was running out of money. And so he said, well, let me unpack my tools. So people know what he's talking about. He's not a carpenter. So he announced that anybody needs a blessing should come to him for a blessing. One of the first people that came in was a woman whose son was blind. So this Shalom of Belz, who later, interesting enough, it just occurred to me, as he was an older man, he also became blind. Anyway, maybe there's something here over here, but he ran his hand over the face of the boy, and suddenly the boy could see. And so now there's this word goes out in the city of Chortov that there is a miracle worker, and the line went out the door. There was another Rebbe who lived there. His name was Reb Chaim Kosover, and he was the grandfather of the first Vizhnitzer Rebbe. He didn't like this whole idea of Rebbes don't like people doing miracles. It's just like, it's like ostentatious, it's show-offy. And he went to go visit this young Rebbe and sort of like give him a piece of his mind. So he came in, the Belzer Rebbe stood up for him and gave him tremendous honor. And the Kosover said to the Belzer, how is it that you're doing this? This is not recommended. We don't deal with, we don't just because we need money go beyond the laws of nature. So he said, no, you don't understand, Rebbe. It actually was quite natural. You see, in this city, there was an engaged couple, and the woman broke it off. And the groom was so heartbroken that he actually died. When he came up above, so he asked that the former bride, his fiancé, should be presented before the heavenly tribunal for a court date, because he died only because of her breaking it off. Well, they told him it's not her time for her to come up here, but you can enact some sort of vengeance. So he said, okay, her first son should be blind. They said, that's fine, but you're going to have to cover his eyes from the time that he's born. So the soul descended as the first baby was born. And the soul covered the baby's eyes so the baby couldn't see. When the boy came in, I saw the soul covering the eyes, and I ran my hand underneath his eyes and pushed it away and said, "It's enough already. Go mind your own business. Go back to heaven and enjoy your heavenly repose." So it wasn't a miracle, Rabbi. Anyway, that's the show. We're glad you had a chance to tune in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week, and we hope to see you again next week. Thanks. Shekol koyveh.